Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better, and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I am married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? I got an interesting email this week. He says, thank you for taking my email in question. My girlfriend and I listen to you on the radio, and she respects your opinion as I do. So here's the question. I've been separated for 9 months. I'm working on a divorce. Is it okay to date? I believe it is. But she's not comfortable with being around people who know my divorce is not final. Can you help? He kind of answered it when he said, if she's not comfortable, it's not a good gig. And Pat, you have some questions about dating?
I am 58 years old,
mm-hmm.
and I've been divorced for years. I was watching the Oprah show the other day, and they were talking about...
They were talking about sexual desire.
How does that factor in if you're after menopause?
Obviously, being postmenopausal, you know, you aren't going to have the same pheromones, but then the men you're probably going to be dating, they're not going to have that need to mate with you, you know, for children. How do you feel about hooking up with somebody else?
To bring Carol to your station, call John Quick at 317-432-0309. Available as a long-form talk show and in 60-second infomercials for even more revenue opportunity. Carol the Coach, truly refreshing radio, enriching the lives of your listeners.
Well, isn't that interesting? That played through its entirety. Hi, guys. I'm Carol the Coach, and I am very excited to be with you tonight. You know, I had a guest scheduled, and unfortunately, he couldn't come on the show. And so I want you to know that tonight is going to be an opportunity for you to be able to very clearly call the show and ask any questions you'd like about sexual addiction. So I want you to call 646-595-3284. Again, the number to call if you have questions, maybe you think you're a sex addict, you want to know more about it, maybe you're a partner of a sex addict, and you're traumatized, you want to know what's going on in your relationship, in your life. Again, that number is 646-595-3284. Now, tonight we're going to be talking about trauma, and one of the things that I know is that I am a cheerleader for addicts. I feel like if they're working a program and they are following through with everything that they absolutely need to do in their life. You know, they're going to their meetings. They've got a sponsor. They're doing their recovery reading. They are reading inspirational materials. They're calling the fellowship. They're scoring their points to determine what it is they can do to prove to their loved one that they're really working a strong recovery program. I'm advocating for them. And I know that that in and of itself can be tough. Because in many, many, many cities, for instance, I'm out of Indianapolis, Indiana, and there is no one but myself that's certified within a 100-mile radius. And so oftentimes that means that I see the addict, I see the partner, and I see them as couples. Now, there's some advantages to that, but there's also disadvantages. You know, I've had partners say, gosh, Carol, it doesn't seem like you get it because, you know, you're believing my partner after he's had years and years and years and years and years of lying. So I get that, yeah, you're right. I'm not on those front lines. I haven't experienced the betrayals, the lies, the serious infractions that have occurred in your relationship. But in some ways, that allows me to perhaps see the things that are hopeful, that give some hope, strength, and recovery. And so, yes, I advocate for sex addicts, but I also advocate for partners, too. And, see, I truly know that this affliction affects partners. You know, I always say, you've heard me say it before, sexual addiction causes shame to the addicts, but pain to the partners. If that's you and you want to call in tonight to either talk about your partner who seems so traumatized, or if you're a partner and you want to talk about how your life has been affected, you can call me at 646-595-3284. Now, there is this new model being used for sexual addiction-induced trauma. And it's for partners, and it's for spouses. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that tonight. You see, this trauma model, it articulates about 13 dimensions of trauma relevant to the clinical impacts, injuries, and symptoms among partners of sex addicts. And, you know, so oftentimes when I'm working with couples, when an addict is not 100% honest, it can re-traumatize the partner. They can be re-injured. And unfortunately, I work with partners that really believe the addict is never being honest. And so they feel re-injured anytime there's even any suspicion of infidelity or grooming or betrayal. So I know myself that it's really important to recognize that partner's pain. And I wanted to talk about sexual trauma among partners. Now, you may have heard of Dr. Minwala. He first studied sexual trauma among partners in 2005 and 2006. And I got to tell you, he found some very interesting information that helped him to create the seven dimensions of being traumatized by a partner. And so that's what I'm going to talk about. You know, there's 13 dimensions of sexual addiction-induced trauma. And they are when the partner discovers the trauma, you know, that discovery is so difficult. Whether the addict comes to the partner and says, I need to come clean, or so oftentimes in today's technological world, the partner will discover either on the phone, through text, on the iPad, very inappropriate pictures or texting, sexting. And so they discover this and, you know, put yourself, if you will, if you're an addict, put yourself in a partner's place. You're just going along as normal. Maybe as a partner, you know something isn't right, but you can't really put your entire finger on it. Maybe you have talked with the addict and you said, you know, I don't know, you're not as close to me. Or, you know, I discovered you masturbating the other night in another room separate from me. It made me feel like maybe you were fantasizing about somebody or something. You know, the addict does leave clues. There's no doubt about it. But sometimes it takes the partner a while to figure out what those clues are. So when the clues become apparent and blatant, that discovery surges through the body and leaves all sorts of post-traumatic stress. And, you know, the stomach tightens up, the chest tightens up, you feel sick, you're nervous, you want to talk about it, you don't want to talk about it, you want to confront the person, you're afraid to confront the person. It just can really throw a partner into a cortisol adrenaline rush. And when that happens, the body is never the same, because I'm telling you, on a cellular level, a partner can oftentimes experience the trauma cellularly, and even if the brain works through the trauma, the body doesn't always work through it with the partner. So discovery is very, very tough. Now, that second dimension of sexual addiction is the disclosure trauma. The addict may come clean and share lots and lots of information. Or, if you're seeing a certified sexual addictions therapist, you might insist on what they call a disclosure. And a disclosure means that the addict shares everything. Now, true, it may not be the gory details. It may just be the facts. But my experience with partners is that they do want the gory details, despite the fact that I encourage them that they don't need them. It helps them to, in some ways, feel like they have some control. Some control in their life by knowing the details. And unfortunately, it may be something that you as a partner feel like you need, but later on you think, oh my gosh, I know way too much. I know so much that I can no longer go into my own bedroom because he brought her there. Or I know so much that I can't go past that restaurant because they had dinner there. Or I know so much that I can't drive past that street because that's where he frequented the prostitute there. So that can be very, very traumatic. And then the third dimension to a partner is something called reality ego fragmentation. And, you know, that's some real jargon. But the impact of a discovery oftentimes includes reality ego disturbance. And it's a turbulence. It's like it's a shattered self. The partner says to him or herself, oh my gosh, my entire life has been an illusion. And there's this real incongruence to what they believed and what they now know. And it makes the partner question everything about his or her life. And for the sake of simplicity, I'm just going to talk about her life. But it can happen to males too. There's no doubt about it. Now, when a partner experiences this kind of instability, it often induces a fear into the system. And there's this fear that says, okay, I am either going to fight for this man, or I'm going to get out of this relationship, or I'm going to freeze. And let's face it, when you are looking at such an important decision as, do I fight, do I flee, or do I freeze, oftentimes it's in direct connection with what's happened to you in your childhood. And what I mean by this is that if there's been another trauma in your life, perhaps your parents came to all the kids and said, look, we're going to get a divorce. It's that same kind of cellular damage that occurs from a disclosure where a child doesn't know what to do. Do they run out of the room? Do they freeze and almost act unaffected? Or do they fight? No, mommy and daddy, you can't get a divorce. So it kind of depends on what has happened, too, in one's history. If a molestation has occurred, there is no doubt that it will on some level parallel what has already happened in the past to a partner, where boundaries have been violated and trust is no more. Now, I've got to say that, you know, when this kind of fear enters into one's psyche, when now you don't know who to trust, when to trust, what to trust, and your entire perception of your reality is altered, this then can create a real sense of what we call reality incongruence. It then makes you question every single thing in your life. You know, I was working with a woman today, and her husband's been doing really well, and he's taken a polygraph test. He took one at the time that he went through the discovery and disclosure, and now it's been 4 months later, and it shows that he is not grooming anybody. He's not inappropriately talking to anybody. But understandably, she as a partner says, I don't know that I believe that. I'm not sure he hasn't faked out the polygraph test. I don't think Tom can go through his life without grooming women to fall in love with him, because he's had multiple affairs. And obviously this woman is no longer trusting her own sense of reality. It sets up inside of her this real severe panic and terror. The sense of helplessness, like she can't get anybody to really understand or believe her. She fears talking about it because she doesn't want to look crazy. And actually, it opens up an entire world where she questions every bit of reality that she has ever experienced. So that is what we call that third dimension of trauma. And again, it is, can be so very tough. Now, the fourth dimension has to do with impact of body and, you know, how it affects the body in terms of its ability to process information, to recover from, you know, immune problems. There is just no doubt that stress like this affects immune systems. You know, I can remember losing the love of my life. And about 9 months later, on a Sunday afternoon, I got what appeared to be the flu, and I got a huge fever. And all I remember was that for about 8 hours, several unusual things happened in my body. And of course, initially, remember, I thought it must be the flu. But one of the things that happened were that my hands became incredibly cold. And then they were on fire. And this transformation would occur within seconds of each other. I mean, I didn't doubt my own mind, but I went, oh my gosh, 1 minute I literally would put my hands up to my face and it would freeze my face. Within 15 seconds, they'd be on fire, and I'd put my hands, you know, around my neck, and I mean, I would just, literally, they'd be burning up. And I kept going, how is the body doing this? What is going on? What is short-circuiting in my body that's creating this temperature change? And on top of it, I was feeling very, very ill. Took my temp, had 103 fever. I was cramping. I just felt like I had the flu. Now, I'm a pretty insightful person, and one of the things that I knew, it came to me very clear, was that I was reacting on some level to the loss I had experienced 9 months before, and that this was in direct correlation to that loss, even though one could have said, oh, you have a very, very weird flu. What I believe to be true is that it took my body some time to create the trauma that I had felt when I lost the love of my life. And what I actually was diagnosed with was lupus. And I really believe that a lot of us have illnesses that lay latent in our body, but when we experience a trauma, they can then be triggered to become active. And that's what I believe happened with me. You see, for me, it was about loss and grieving that loss. For partners of addicts, it's usually about fear and how it's metabolized and how the sex addict compulsively may or may not respond. It's interesting because relational rupture will impact traumatic process and symptomatology significantly. Now, those are big words that mean that when you've had a relationship that you felt secure in, and then something significantly disrupts that, it will cause symptoms that you and your body have never experienced before. Hey, I'm Carol the Coach, and this is Sex Help with Carol the Coach, and we're talking about the 13 dimensions for partners who have experienced sexual addiction in their loved ones. So when we come back, we're going to be talking more about that. And listen, feel free to call 646-595-3284 if you have any questions or if you want to be able to share your own personal story.
Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Carol the Coach.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just, for me, has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better, and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
That is so important to know what you want to change and what you don't. And so when I'm talking to partners, I oftentimes will say, you know, you're hypervigilant about what's going on. You're checking your husband's computer. You're looking at his texts. You're using technology to copy his keystrokes. You know, you're reading his journal. You're reading his workbook. How helpful is that? Well, unfortunately, that all equates into control. And there are so many other things that the partner needs to do, because that is not a healthy choice. It's a normal choice. It's an understandable choice, but it's not a healthy choice. Okay, so we were talking about the 13 dimensions of working with a partner who's experienced the trauma of finding out that her husband is a sex addict. And I said there's impact to body and medical intersection. And I just shared with you a story about the impact on my body when I experienced the loss. Well, for partners who have just found out about their husband's infidelity or his exhibitionism or his voyeurism or his frauderism, this can result in a lot of physical trauma. And the physical trauma might include that it actually triggers an eating disorder. We've often found that when bad things happen to women, if they're prone to an eating disorder, they will immediately choose to stop eating to control how they look and feel about themselves. And so, unfortunately, this kind of trauma can trigger that, as well as it can trigger weight loss or gain, vomiting, shaking, hair loss, sometimes almost to the extreme, insomnia and other sleep disturbances, psycho-emotional disassociation, which is a big term that really means that people can go into that state of separating themselves from themselves so that they no longer get hurt. They don't have to feel the pain. And when they disassociate, they no longer are authentic. They're coping the best way that they can. You know, partners will oftentimes become hysterical, get in the fetal position and cry. They'll have expressions of rage. They'll be hypervigilant, as I indicated earlier. They'll be checking everything. There'll be muscular pains, fibromyalgia, stomach sickness, motor coordination problems. There may be things like vaginal spasms, aversion to being physically or sexually touched, promiscuity. You know, they think, well, if I need him, I'm going to win him back through sex. You know, there are just simply hundreds and hundreds of physical and medical symptoms that can occur when a partner has experienced the trauma of her husband's infidelity or a dual life. So in working with partners, one of the things that I really want to do is start working specifically on self-care. You know, self-care is the antidote for this impact to the body. And if you had to think about what do you do to feel better that's healthy, that doesn't mean drinking up a storm or smoking marijuana or sleeping all the time. Healthy stuff might look like exercising or increasing your social network, you know, getting out of the house, maybe doing a trip to your sister's, you know, something that gives you some sense of relief. And it's so important to work on self-care when you've been betrayed like this. Now, it's critical that the harmful impact to a person's body is and becomes the focus of treatment. And so if a partner is not willing to do her own work and do some things that really increase self-care, then I really feel at that point it's time to get her referred to an intensive treatment program, get her hospitalized, get her into some sort of residential situation where she can get away from the situation and really focus on herself. Now, another one of those dimensions for partners is external crisis and destabilization. Now, what I mean by that is that when discovery and disclosure has occurred, all the practical changes, all the overwhelming chaos that has ensued as a result of hearing about this traumatic crisis is absolutely overwhelming. And it's like, oftentimes it feels like big T trauma. And big T trauma, you've heard on the show, is when the trauma is so extensive, it makes you really question whether you can live, whether you will be able to function. And, you know, that means not only do you question your relationship, you start questioning whether you have the capability to make your life better. If this has happened to you, you know, you can feel free to call and talk about it. The number is 646-595-3284. Now, oftentimes when a partner finds out about the addiction, not only is her entire world rocked by the infidelity, but she may find that there are significant changes related to her finances. Maybe for the first time ever, she finds out that she and her husband are broke. They have no money. Or she kicks him out and then has to deal with the sudden shift in being a single parent. Or you know, she has to decide who is safe enough that I can talk to about this. And, of course, most partners at that point feel very codependent. There's a part of them that doesn't want to expose their dirty secret, because what will result for them is that they fear that their husbands will never be forgiven. Now, there is so much dysfunctional chaos that there are a lot of practical concerns that people just don't believe they can cope with. You know, maybe they want to get some treatment, but they can't afford it. Resources may be very, very slim. And so you can't walk out on your partner, nor can you kick him out. So it's imperative to note that because the addict, you know, obviously what we call the identified patient, it's important to know what you really want for your relationship. Do you want the partner there to hold down the fort? Or do you want that person gone so that you feel it will stop the bleeding, so to speak? And unfortunately, the homeostasis of your family has changed. You have to decide, what are you going to tell the kids? How much are you going to say? You know, I'm a big believer in when there's been sexual impropriety, it is important to talk to the kids together and to have the addict say, you know, Daddy has done some wrong things and he's working to get better, and Mom is really mad, and Dad's staying at Uncle Jerry's house for the time being, and he's working on getting healthy, and he's very, very sorry for what he's done to Mommy, and he's very, very sorry about what he's done to the family, but he still really loves you, and he's working on getting better. I mean, you really don't have to go into much of the details. You know, maybe that looks like, so Daddy won't be coming to your games, or Daddy's still going to be coming to your games. He's just not going to be sitting with Mommy. It's very important to keep kids in the loop for two reasons. Well, really, for three reasons. One, when something traumatic is happening in the family, it's important to talk about it. Kids that deal with addiction learn how not to talk, trust, or feel. And so you want to break that pattern. You want to encourage them to talk about anything. Secondly, it's important to potentially break the cycle of addiction. And if you have three kids, one of them is very likely going to have problems with addiction. So when you can deal with it openly and honestly, you're breaking the intergenerational pattern of addiction, and that's always a good thing. Three, you know, you want your kids to be able to come and talk to you about anything. Well, you have to be able to talk to them too. Now, again, they shouldn't be your confidants. They shouldn't be your surrogate partners. But they should be given some idea of what is going on so that they can talk about things, know that it's okay, and watch the modeling that you are participating in as a couple. And as a parent, you're supposed to be role modeling anyway. You know, and the other thing is, for the addict who has tended to lie for a long, long time, if the addict says that he is going on a business trip when in reality he's been kicked out of the house, how honest is that? Not only are you interfering with the integrity of your family, but you're also telling the addict, you know, there are some things you can lie about and other things that you can't. So it's very important to be 100% honest. And that can get very, very dicey because most people want to protect their kids and most people on some level want to protect the integrity of their family by sugarcoating it or minimizing the impact and effect. Now, according to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, post-traumatic stress disorder is often characterized by a heightened sensitivity to potential threats, including those that are related to traumatic experience. And the DSM-5 describes the symptom of re-experiencing as covering spontaneous memories of the traumatic event. There may be recurrent dreams that are related to it, flashbacks, and lots of prolonged psychological distress, typically activated by what we call triggers. And triggers are those cues on a daily basis that instills, for whatever reason, that fear and panic that a partner feels when her husband cheats. And a trigger may look like something as benign as, oh my gosh, I don't want to go past that Kroger grocery store because that's where you said you bought the prostitute flowers. Or, oh my gosh, you know, this is the anniversary date of the day that you told me a year ago, a month ago, whatever. And I'll never be able to deal with the 1st of April, 1st of May, 1st of June, because that first day triggers my memory of what it was like to hear about your infidelity. And so these triggers create a lot of post-traumatic stress, which, you know, again, I told you, is the combination of the current day stress and past traumas that have typically occurred in a woman's childhood. Oftentimes we say that the partner is hypervigilant in trying to control and gather information. I call it the Columbo syndrome, where the partner asks a million questions every day, day in and day out, for sometimes a month, sometimes 6 months, sometimes a year, or even two. And if this person is not in recovery herself, if she doesn't have enough support systems, there will be ruminating thoughts that just create the same questions day in and day out. So, unfortunately, the sixth dimension to experiencing sexual addiction as a partner is on hypervigilance and re-experiencing the trauma and the drama. And that, in and of itself, can be so painful. Because not only is that person hyper-aroused and hyper-vigilant, but she's re-experiencing the symptomatology of the trauma reactivation based on cues that are well-established from her childhood. So she's not just experiencing the loss of the reality of what she had with her husband, she's also experiencing the multiple molestations she experienced as a child, or watching her father walk out on her mother, or watching her mother leave and never come back. So that ends up leaving the partner in a situation where they feel like they have to become professionals at supervising. And, you know, that is absolutely exhausting. When a woman has to check the calendar, check what her husband said, record everything, get chronic pictures of where her husband is, although exhaustive to the addict, it's very exhaustive to the partner. Now, oftentimes, there is sex addiction-induced perpetration, and that's the seventh dimension of the trauma incurred with a sex addict. And what we've found is that clinical researchers have oftentimes given psychological and emotional abuse less attention than physical abuse. In other words, they've looked at the domestic violence, but they haven't realized that psychologically and emotionally, abuse has a huge impact on a human being. And that psychological or emotional abuse is absolutely as devastating as physical abuse in terms of harm and symptoms and traumatic impact. And sex addiction induced perpetration includes emotional abuse, psychological abuse, family and relational domination, covert management of deceptive compartmentalization. You know, oftentimes my partners look at the absolute worst scenario when their husband says, I'm going to the store, I'll be back in 20 minutes. They immediately go, okay, how long can oral sex take? Because I'm sure he's getting a blowjob. He's not just going for milk. And if that visit to the VP takes an extra 10 minutes, their mind is racing about the other activities that it could have incurred. And again, when they think those things, then they no longer feel as violated because he has not pulled one over on them. And so you can imagine when it's as if dealing with sexual addiction isn't bad enough, to become hypervigilant about what possibly could be happening deprives the partner and certainly the addict of any normal relationship. And that is very, very tough. Now, it's interesting because sometimes an addict who's in and out of recovery or not in recovery at all will purposefully manipulate his partner. And there's a terminology called gaslighting. And that's the process in which the addict intentionally manipulates a partner's reality in order to protect his reality and the truth from becoming known or discovered by the partner. This is a significant form of psychological manipulation, and it leaves serious damages because it erodes and ruptures that person's relationship with her own self, her own confidence, her own intuition. And, you know, that's not just a partner who lies to get out of hurting his partner. That is a sex addict who wants his cake and to eat it too. He isn't really ready to change. So as a result, not only does he not change, but he strategically manipulates the woman to believe that her paranoia, her fears, and her anxieties are delusional. And it can be, you know, it's devastating for a partner to have to deal with the addict's indiscretions, but it's even more devastating when she's made to feel that she's crazy. And so that gaslighting is one of the most serious forms of psychological and emotional abuse. Now, we know that in sexual addiction, there can often be trauma to a partner's sexuality. And that trauma may have to do with the partner not feeling good enough. So oftentimes, a partner will start to question whether she in some way contributed to her husband's sexual addiction. Her sexuality may be impacted by the sex addiction in a similar way where, you know, they begin to question, partners begin to question, what did I do to bring on this sexual addiction? And so, boy, that can be very, very tough because oftentimes I talk to you about, you know, women that then become very promiscuous. They really try to gain their husband back by being overly sexual, or they sexually shut down and lose all interest in sex, or they feel a sense of numbing. They just don't care about anything anyway, anyhow. Or believe it or not, they can have genital pain that includes vaginismus, vulvic pain, reproductive and gynecological impact. They can have panic attacks that take them back to previous indiscretions, molestations. They can feel a lot of psychological blame. They may feel like they were sexually inadequate. And so the sexual trauma that can occur because of the sexual addiction is huge. And that is the eighth dimension that partners oftentimes experience. Now, interestingly enough, if a partner receives a sexually transmitted infection or disease, that can often lead to a loss of pregnancy or induced abortions, other gynecological trauma, you know, pelvic inflammatory disorder, chlamydia, that then affects the fertility of the partner. And the ripple effect from that is long-term. Very, very, very difficult. Now, to the extent that there's, these issues and problems, it's also important if you're a partner that's experienced some of this to remind yourself of your strength and that you can get through everything and that you have to, again, really work on self-care. Because clearly, when you've been traumatized by a discovery and a disclosure, and then on top of it, you find out that you have a sexually transmitted disease, and maybe that disease then creates a spontaneous abortion or miscarriage, it can feel devastating and it can feel like you don't want to move on. So it's very, very important that you increase your self-care, find support you need, go to Essanon or COSA, seek certified sexual addiction treatment through a CSAT, a certified sexual addiction therapist, and begin to work on some of these relational traumas that have occurred and the medical implications that have happened to you because the addict participated in unhealthy relationships and behaviors. All right, I feel like I've given you a lot of food for thought, and I know that it can be very tough. If you're an addict listening to this show tonight, I applaud you for trying to understand what the partner is going through. You've heard me say it hundreds of times before when I say it is up to you to develop empathy for your partner and to begin to work on building the trust by allowing her feelings, by empathizing with them, by sitting with them, and by taking on the anger that she feels. That is the heart of a healthy relationship, especially when she's shattered and hemorrhaging. And again, I so appreciate you being a part of this show and listening to what it takes to make your life better. Sexual addiction leaves a lot of wounds and it leaves a lot of scars. But I always say that if you can recover from it, it is so important that you recognize that you can be closer than ever and you can have a real relationship that more than likely you didn't have to begin with. But that takes a variety of support and resources. It takes reading good books. It takes going to support groups. It takes getting very specialized help. So I will catch you next week for more Sex Help with Carol the Coach. And as I say at the end of every show, there'll only be one of you at all times. So fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. And have a good week. And keep it simple, one day at a time. Take care of you.